Welcome to Common Ground YYC on Livewire Calgary.
Reviendra à la ville de Calgary. Calgary! Here come the
flames! Champions! Today, Calgary is a different place than it was yesterday.
All right, welcome to Common Ground YYC, episode 11.
Ooh.
Yeah, we made it. I'm here with Michael Brown. He's the president and CEO of Calgary Municipal Land Corporation, or CMLC. Welcome.
Thanks for having me, Josh.
Yeah, really. Great. Yeah, appreciate you coming on. Why don't you tell us a little bit first about some of your background, your professional background, how you became president and CEO of CMLC, and a little bit about what you do here in this role.
I think one of the things my mom would be very happy that you referred to as my professional background. So when you really look back at my time...
Do you want to talk about your personal background?
No, it's true. Personal, it's probably shorter.
Yeah.
I graduated from the University of Calgary in the late 90s, and I quickly got into the world of economic development. I got to the point where I was fortunate enough to be a VP Economic Development at, well, I should say too, I have a political science degree, so that's totally,
me too.
That's totally messed up. Well, there we go. There's alignment. And I went through the process, started Economic Development, found myself at Calgary Economic Development when it, reestablished itself. I was a VP there for a while. Decided I wanted to do more, to the chagrin of everybody in my family. Was like, you're doing so well. It's like, no, I want to do something different. And at that point in time, I decided to get into real estate. Worked at Cushman Wakefield for a while. Worked on the Bow Building as part of Matthew Southwest, and then found myself at Calgary Municipal Land Corporation.
Cool. Yeah, I think the first time we ever connected was when you were giving myself in the office of the mayor a tour of the Bow.
Yeah, so I remember that time.
It was capped off, but not fully enclosed.
No, it was
good. It was terrifying to be on like the 56th floor when there was no walls.
No, it was great. I actually I started with a pretty strong fear of heights, and then through that project, I evolved to a very little fear of heights.
Yeah, so it's good that you're working on the tallest building in Calgary at the time.
It helped.
So a little bit about your role. You weren't the first CEO of CMLC. You came in sort of year four.
Yes.
And sort of picked up the mantle from Chris Ohlenberger, who was the previous CEO. So you kind of came in midstream, but before a lot of the sort of vertical development had started happening in the community, but a lot of the, infrastructure and stuff had happened there. Tell us a little bit about what CMLC is, first of all, for people that don't know what it is. It's an important organization in the city.
Yeah.
What's its primary responsibility?
Well, the simplest way when I look at it is I work for a company that works for the city. So, from the average taxpayer, we're all city employees in some sort of way. But CMLC is an arm's length company, wholly owned by the city of Calgary. Really, the city is our shareholder. Mm-hmm. We have a board of directors that's appointed by our shareholder. That's really all representatives of the private sector, excluding the mayor does sit on it, as well as two councillors. And that's really how we're set up. And we were set up, at the very beginning to focus on the redevelopment of which we refer to as the Rivers District, but really it was East Village. Mm-hmm. That's when I came on board, that's where our focus was. Over the last number of years, we've had a number of discussions with our shareholder and said, hey, listen, we think we've developed a really good tool. Is there other things that you want us to do? So they've gotten us involved in other projects. In the early days, it was really a land development company, hence Calgary Municipal Land Development.
Yeah.
In the last number of years, we've done some vertical development in terms of obviously with the new public library. The Simmons Building is a building that we worked on. And we also have some land assets that are outside of the core.
So the CRL, so this is a term you hear a lot about. Yeah. I think I've heard people try and explain exactly how it works, where the money flows, who's paying for what, a number of different ways.
Yes, there is, yes.
So I know this was the first such tool in Canada, but it was a very common type of tool called tax increment financing used all over the United States. And it was Mayor Bronconi that sort of tried to shepherd this as a tool to redevelop the East Village. And it was implemented, I think, in 2007,
yeah.
Yeah, so can you explain to the average person, layman who is not a municipal finance dork, what a CRL is? How does it actually work?
Well, let's start with, what's the reason for CRL or tax increment financing? And the terms are pretty interchangeable. If you're in the US, they call it TIF. In Canada, they call it CRL. And it's really looking at saying, you have a blighted area that has sat for many, many years And for whatever reason, it's just not turning the corner. And oftentimes the reason it's not turning the corner is there's a need for infrastructure investment and a vision that really goes beyond the typical political cycle. So if you kind of look at that as the cause, as it gets to what Mayor Brown Kanye and council at the time got into, is they said, you know, we have to develop a longer vision for this East Village. It had been a problematic area for many, many years. And in fact, if you go back to, you know, I think it's the 1930s and 40s, my mother was telling me a story about her grandmother living in East Village and moving to Bridgeland because she just needed to get away from all the negative stuff.
Yeah.
So there's a long history here. So when you look at East Village itself, you say, okay, well, why hasn't it turned the corner? And, you know, there's many good reasons for that, and we can get into that. But there was really a deficit of infrastructure, a deficit of community investment. And that's why private dollars weren't coming. And so how do you do that? Well, and how do you borrow the necessary amounts of money to move that forward? Mm-hmm. And so that's where the CRL came in. And so what the CRL is imagine if we have a parcel of land, and it can be any size, but a parcel of land. And let's just say that parcel of land in 2007 pays $5 in taxes. And I know that's not what it pays, especially today.
Yeah.
But imagine it pays $5 in taxes. We do know that that land's going to go up in value through either building on the land or just raising values around that land. So let's say in 2007, it was $5. And then in 2008, it's worth $7. What the CRL is the difference between the five and the seven. So it's the $2. And then what we were able to do is you do our CRL term. Our first term was 20 years. Well, you can borrow $40 because you can borrow over the course of how much dollars you're going to gain. And of course, that property continues to grow and develop.
Yeah.
And that's really how it works. So you're borrowing on future tax dollars to make an investment today. And in East Village, that was really important because we had a huge flood. Flooding was a big issue of the community. Infrastructure below grade was problematic. It had no sense of place. It was really isolated. And so those are all the investments that we needed to make in East Village in order to move it to a point that a private developer would say, yes, I want to invest in that community.
Right. That's a pretty good explanation.
I hope so.
Right? And so, yeah, So the $5 continues to go to the city.
Continues to go back into the general revenue of the city. It's split. Like, to be, you know, honest, of that $5, 30% of it goes essentially for school taxes.
Yeah.
But in the terms of, we have the ability, and this is one of the reasons cities really like it,
yeah,
is anything over that $5, say it's a $7, instead of the school taxes going to the province, we get to invest that in our community as well.
Right. So I know one of the criticisms of CRLs or TIFs, especially in the past, is that the boundaries are often larger than what the targeted redevelopment area is.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, people looked at, you talked about the focus at the beginning really being East Village, but the CRL boundary went, you know, a fair amount beyond East Village. And there's a sort of a notch on the boundary of the
tooth, if you will.
The tooth that sort of fits in the bow magically.
Yeah.
And the taxes that go along with that. I mean, some people would criticize that as sort of cheating, but you know, I think the city at the time looked at it as kind of a risk mitigation. If things didn't go as well as they'd hope, perhaps, you know, just the tax base from the bowl would at least mitigate some of that risk if the market didn't come along in the East Village proper. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, and it was actually, it's really smart. And then there's actually a really cool backstory to the whole. So why TIFs or CRLs generally fail is they collapse financially. And so it's, you don't attract enough investment to pay off your debt. The way that the city of Calgary, you know, the mayor and council at that time said, you know, we need to manage our risks. So what we're going to do, we know this bow building is coming along, and we're going to include it in the community. So that became our anchor. And it's the same as, you know, if you set up a mall, and Sears is a bad example, but maybe Nordstrom. So you have your anchor, and that's the part that gives you the confidence that you're going to meet your bills. Yeah. You're going to go through. It's going to attract the interest that you need. So the tooth or the bow really became our anchor. But the cool story of it is, prior to the bow being built there, and this is back in the time that I worked in economic development, private development did not take place on the east side of Centre Street in Calgary, period. The farthest it got in terms of private development was the Petro-Canada building or the Suncor building.
Right.
There was a definition with development community was that if you had a private building and be on the west side of downtown, and if it was a public building and be on the east side of downtown. What the council then at that time went to in Canada and said, you know what, if you invest in our community on this other side of Centre Street, we will take the taxes from that and we'll put it into the area.
Oh, it's very interesting. I think a lot of people wouldn't.
They don't know that. Yeah. And it's, and it was very visionary as it went. And it, that was really the piece that gave in Canada at the time. Subsequently, they split into two companies, the confidence to say, yeah, we will go with that because we know it'll improve our area.
You'd be under the impression that they might have gone in a more traditional location in downtown.
They would have. They looked at a number of different sites. Like we, you know, this is part of my interesting journey. Yeah. So when I was at Economic Development, we were helping them looking at sites. And they had looked at, you know, some of the more traditional sites that you've seen. They've been built over time, you know, where Livingston has now been built or Jameson. Yeah. They looked at those sites.
Yeah.
They also looked at, you know, strangely enough, McMahon Stadium. They looked at Firestone Park. They looked at some of the things up on Mount Royal. They looked at multiple sites because they wanted to consolidate. But in Canada's leadership at that time, and if you recall, was Gwen Morgan, is he really wanted to do something that was game-changing for the community.
Yeah.
And so that's really what got them focused in on that site.
So just a bit of a status update on East Village. So you mentioned some of the pieces of infrastructure, the heritage, the library, the public infrastructure. I think people see the investment. It's very physical. It's very tangible.
Yeah.
So how much has been spent to date? And, you know, what's the outlook in terms of is there more investment, public investment going in the East Village? Or now is it the public investment over and we're just waiting for the private investment to carry through over the next while, or what's the sort of current financial picture of the CRL?
Yeah, so the, and there's really, you can make it so confusing as we go along. So the first CRL, which is 2007 to 2027, subsequently, you know, and I'm sure your listeners have heard, it's been extended for another 20 years.
Yeah.
But if you focus on that first CRL, I call it CRL 1.
Yeah.
We've essentially exhausted that CRL in terms of the dollars. We have taken, we've essentially spent just over $400 million within the community. What that went into is all new infrastructure below grade. So pipes, streetscaping, you know, sidewalk, sense of place. Riverwalk came out of that as well. Some of the park spaces that we have, St. Patrick's Island came out of that. The bridge came out of that.
Mm-hmm.
Those are all investments that we've made. And so we really don't have much more. But what I would say, I think, is, you know, some of the investments we made, we're going back and saying, can we make these a little better? And it's not to be wasteful in terms of money, but we had some real learnings that have taken place over the 10 years. And I'll give an example for your listeners. So on Riverwalk, we built Riverwalk, fantastic. I think it's been really well received with the community.
Yeah.
And we had some crime issues about, you know, 5 years ago, it was taking place on that. So we engaged a criminologist. They went down and looked at it and came and met with the team, and they said, you know, that Riverwalk's really nice. And we said, yeah, no, we know it's really nice. They said, no, it's really nice. You've made it comfortable for absolutely everybody to be there, especially the guys that are doing the bad stuff. So we went back and changed some of the lighting to actually get it so it's a bit more better from a SEPTED point of view.
Yeah. SEPTED being
safety. Yeah. So sorry. So
crime prevention.
Crime prevention as you go through. And it, like a big part of the stigma of East Village to overcome is that this is a nasty place where it's got all the crime in the city. And so that was one of the things we had to be quite conscious of.
Yeah, I want to pick up on one of those threads, but you talked a little bit about the extension of the CRL. So how is that working? So I know the you said the initial term is 20 years.
Yes.
So City Council's now voted to approve an extension of this year. So does that mean there's a first 20 years and a second 20 years that are separate accounts, or is it all just flow?
It all becomes blended. I think for whenever I talk about it, I call it CRL1 and CRL2, just because I think it's easier for people to kind of break them up.
But it is just one
CRL. It's just one CRL.
And it's just that the payback period is now
40 years.
40 years of September.
And the collection of revenues over that 40-year period of time as well. So we have the ability to actually do more. And that's one of the big reasons that we were interested in others in the extension was to fund a lot of the development that we want to see in Victoria Park.
Yeah. So you touched a little bit on some of the crime prevention and environmental design issues that go into developing a community like this. You know, one of the reasons why, you know, this was a place that was not attracting a lot of public investment is because a lot of the social issues and crime issues had sort of been kind of dumped into or concentrated in this area with a lot of neglect. I mean, this was a place 10 years ago or 12 years ago that there's not a lot of Calgarians could have envisioned living here. That's certainly changed.
It has changed.
But I do want to ask, like, you know, you have you still have those social institutions.
Yeah, yeah.
You have, you know, seniors residences.
Yeah.
You have a lot of new residents moving in. talk a little bit about how that mix of people and yeah. And how that's actually working.
So if I go back a little bit, you say, you know, why did East Village become what it became? And it, you know, the drop-in centers in the early days, we actually had three drop-in centers. They didn't help as yeah. it went. But there was really, we isolated East Village in a pretty significant way. So the first, you know, piece, natural isolation you have is you have a river.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to cross. You know, the bridges weren't there. Second is you have the CP rail tracks.
Yeah.
And just to make sure that it turned into the nastiest place we can find, we built City Hall. And we built it in a way that created another wall.
Yeah.
So we essentially isolated this area. The other piece is, and folks that know me know this, I come from, my grandparents were both policemen. And so they tell the story of East Village, whereas in the early days, they actually really liked East Village. Because if they needed to pick up Bob, because Bob did something wrong, they'd go down to East Village. Mm-hmm. So we actually, as a community, built a nice little cluster of negativity. And we made sure we kept them all on spot because we didn't want it to spill amongst our community. So hence, that's why East Village came along. We did have seniors. We still do have seniors. It's a huge part of our community. We do have drop-in centers. The interesting thing about the drop-in centers that's often lost is the folks that are in the drop-in centers aren't people that are doing the crime.
Right.
The criminals are the ones that are coming to prey on the people within the drop-in centers.
Right.
The others in terms of seniors is we have a great seniors population, but when that, during that period of negativity, they never left their room because they're just like, we're not going to go outside. So a lot of what we've tried to do over the last number of years, and it really started, you know, under Chris and it continued under myself, is what can we do to actually create a more cohesive mixed community?
Uh-huh.
And really define success not by we have one of one thing, but we have a bunch of many things.
So I wanted to talk a little bit about, as well, the role CMLC is played in community building. It's a little unique. You know, every other redeveloping community is sort of just, you know, there might be an area redevelopment plan, but that doesn't have the entity to really steward it, like CMLC.
Yeah.
Do you think there's, you know, and I've watched through the years, you know, how the infrastructure's been built. There's been a lot of stuff done here that you wouldn't necessarily even be able to do, or the private sector wouldn't be able to kind of fight through maybe some of the red tape to do some innovative and interesting things. You know, within this community, you know, is there lessons we can learn from here about, you know, there's places in the Beltline or Kensington that, you know, almost could use that same level of care and attention, you know?
I agree.
The East Village is very, you know, it's curated in a sense. There's lots of programming and marketing associated with it. Public Realm is very carefully planned and constructed.
Yeah.
Is this a model, do you think, that could be expanded to some of our other redeveloping communities in Calgary?
I believe so. And I think there's two elements to what you're talking about. First is because of the CRL, we've got access to capital that a private developer, it'd be very difficult for a private developer to put, you know, $300 million plus into this size of the area. So that's an advantage. But I think it speaks to the deficit that we had in the community to kind of bring it up to a level playing field with everybody else.
Required that level of care and attention.
The second is we're, because of the nature of our business and the nature we are, we're in it for the long game. And so we don't have that requirement to need to check out. And oftentimes if you speak to, you know, a developer, they desire to be there for the longer term, but financially it's just, they don't have the wherewithal to do that. In regards to, you know, the so-called red tape with the city of Calgary, we do push the limits, but we, you know, we really, I think that's probably one of the skills we've developed as a company is that we're able to do that collaboratively with the city and actually get them to look at things different. Mm-hmm. You know, the example I would give is the new Central Library, not the library itself, but the fact that it's built over a train track.
Yeah.
It was the first time in Calgary that a building of that type was built over an active train track.
Right.
You know, Westbrook Station is over a train track, but it wasn't active at the time. So what we did, and I think I learned this when I worked on the Bow Building, is we proved it out. We went and engaged the marketplace before we even moved forward with the project. And we actually brought in a structural engineer. We engaged a construction company. And we said, we want you to study what they're doing in New York with Brookfield Station. And they have multiple train lines that they're building over. And so we pulled together, we developed models, and we went to colleagues at the City of Calgary and said, look, this is how you can do it. This is how you can move it forward. So at that point in time, in many ways, we unencumbered the project. And then at that point in time, we went to market.
Mm-hmm.
And that's some of the things we've tried to do. I think where we take I wouldn't give the impression to anybody that we take risks for the sake of risks. Everything that you see in East Village, you can go somewhere globally and you can look at the exact same thing.
Right.
It's just new to Calgary. And I think that that's one of the evolutions of Calgary. And and I'd like to think that it started a little bit with the Bow Building and others, which is, you know, let's not just focus locally, let's focus globally. And let's look at best practices and how we can incorporate those into our community.
Also, like, just about the market. Yeah. I know it's been a tough market.
Yeah, and it's not the greatest market.
It's not the greatest market to be in. But who's moving to East Village? And what can we kind of expect from... Yeah. You know, the next stages of some of the private sector development coming, what's sort of on the horizon here in East Village in terms of development? And how's that thinking about, how's the market affecting how you're thinking about staging? I know you still have some city owned lands that are and under the stewardship of CMLC that are there. Are those plans sort of been held off a little longer than you've hoped? Or
not really. Like when... So this in my career, this is the second recession I've gone through, by far the worst. You know, when we went through it at 2007, you know, it wasn't a great time in 2007 to be working on an office building, as you know, with the financial markets crashed. And so it forced us at the time to kind of rethink the whole project. And there was a bunch of outcomes that came out as a result of that. One is our team was far stronger. We had 30% smaller workforce on the Bow Building than we had in 2008 than we had 2006. We were able to shift all of our contracts from cost plus, which is basically saying if it costs $5 to build it and it goes to $7, well, you as the owner have to pay for that, to fixed price. So what I learned from that period of time is even in a down market, you can have positive outcomes that went through. Then I met with, when this time around it started going down, I went and talked to some folks that had been through the 80s. And one of the things I learned is the people that make are uber wealthy within Calgary. They made most of their money in the 80s. That's when they did the best. That's when they differentiated from the competitors. And so we adapted a mindset within us. And it's not obviously our business is about making money, not about making money, but it's about how do we leverage this opportunity. So if you went by East Village today, you would see a lot of tower cranes. And you say, how can that be?
Yeah.
A lot of those residential towers sold during the high market. And we really pushed people to build during the low market so you could get a better buying buck. You know, on the library itself, we saved considerable amounts of money just because the cost of construction changed. Went through that, you know, and you raised an interesting point about the who buys within the community. That's evolved. In the early days, we defined it as an urban explorer, which we still call as an urban explorer. But our definition of an urban explorer was somebody between 30 and 40 years old, 10 years ago. Our definition of urban explorer now is ageless. It's really, it's a mentality. And so we have, you know, families that have moved into East Village. We have seniors that have moved into East Village. We have young people that moved into East Village. And so our mantra over the last few years is really about diversity. You know, we want to create as much diversity as we can. And it's not about building a homogeneous community. There's outcomes from that that are kind of interesting. You know, we in our master plan, we didn't have a daycare. We didn't have a school. We didn't have all those things people are looking for. Fortunately, one of our developers is building a daycare. You know, the school, we're still trying to figure out our way through that.
Yeah.
But that's really how the master plan's evolved from those early days to where we are now. It's a very long answer, but it gives you a sense of where we're at on that.
No, it's great. It'll be interesting to see what's to come in the next 10 years in East Village. But now I want to kind of jump across the train tracks.
Great.
You know, the other half of the Rivers District is south of the CPR rail tracks, commonly known as, you know, Victoria Park Stampede, is part of the east part of the Beltline community. You know, also a place that's had social distress over the years.
Similar story,
but still a fair amount of redevelopment, high-rise redevelopment going on. You've seen, you know, Stampede Ground, which over generations had expropriated land and kind of cleared out historical community.
And probably
is not much action in its redevelopment on Stampede Park as some people would have hoped. Yeah. But, you know, now the CMLC and the city have embarked on the Rivers District master plan. Talk a little bit about what that vision's about.
So, you know, first talk a little bit about the Stampede, and I think it's the big anchor that's down there. So in the early days, and it kind of leads into what the challenges of the community are. So those, I'm not old enough, but I know I've heard the stories. The Stampede itself actually used to open up to the west. If you went down to the Stampede, you'd go straight down 17th Avenue.
Yeah.
And that's where you'd enter the Stampede, you know, very inviting. Victoria Park is actually just like East Village, pretty isolated. Yeah. It's isolated by the CP tracks. It's got a the South LRT line, and it's got a river. With the Stampede itself, we've actually kept it focused. The logical entrance has always been from Victoria Park.
Yeah.
Back in the days when it used to be from the west side, it was a completely different institution. It was a different entity. And so the other side of that is the Stampede had advanced a number of visions for the area. They would probably wanted to move a lot more than the development did. I'm glad that they didn't. And the reason I'm glad that they didn't is, and even they would say today, mm-hmm. it wouldn't have been the right thing.
Okay.
It wouldn't have accomplished their goals as well as the civic goals. It'd kind of be one or the other. So one of the first things within our master plan that we're focused at doing is getting back to, you know, yesteryear, and that is to actually open up 17th Avenue so you can actually drive right through and walk through the grounds, not have it so, you know, you get that wall.
So how do you actually achieve that? There's a train track.
Yeah.
Well, so what's the logistics of what that looks like?
So there's two pieces to it. One is we envision an at-grade crossing. Okay. It'd be great to bury it, but that's just cost-wise, there's not enough dollars. There's never enough dollars to do everything you'd want to do, so you got to pick and poke and where you can go.
You have a healthy budget.
Yes, exactly. Not that healthy.
Not that healthy.
So we're going to create an at-grade crossing. Yeah. We're doing this with the city. But CMLC is going to lead the process on it, and we're going to redo the Stampede station similar to what you see at the Chinook station. So that changes the whole behavior of that little corner. If you've ever walked across that little plus 15 crossing, that won't be there anymore.
Is this predicated, like, is the success of that really predicated on, you know, what happens like redevelopment wise on the west of McLeod Trail there? Because it's a little dodgy in terms of, like, it's there's a lot of surface parking lots. It's just, there's not a lot of activity there.
Well, and the reason is that there's not a lot of activity is there's a dead end. I'll draw a comparison for you, and it's not the same. But if you imagine you're at Bankers Hall and you're walking down Stephen Avenue Mall.
Yeah.
And you're walking down Stephen Avenue towards City Hall. As you get closer to City Hall, the activity fades off.
Right.
Right?
Yep, it does.
And in on the other side of City Hall is East Village, and then it picks up again as it goes.
Now.
You have this, and that's because of the investments that the communities went through. Yeah. 17th Avenue has the same dynamic.
Right.
You're going, you got lots of activity as it moved down 17th Avenue Southwest, and then it fades off. Well, why does it fade off? Because there's a dead end at the end. If you can carry that through, you'll see those parking lots fill in. You'll see them develop. And then on the other side, when you get to Olympic Way or Stampede Trail or, you know, whatever we want to call it, 4th Street, if you really want that to be a successful street, in a high street, and what I mean, like active retail, you need to have that pedestrian traffic, vehicular traffic. Otherwise, it's Deadsville and no retailer is going to survive. And it'll end up, you know, I've often looked at it, if you do not do the crossing at 17th Avenue, you will have exactly what we have today.
Mm.
You're not going to get the activity that you want.
Interesting. So that's one big chunk of it.
Yeah.
There's about a $150 million approved budget for the district.
There is, yeah.
And I want to get to the arena and the event center and maybe a little bit of on the BMO expansion as well about what those anchors can do. But in terms of what CMLC is investing in, beyond the 17th crossing, what else is happening on the Victoria Park side?
So this comes back to, you remember I said CRL1 and CRL2. So in CRL1, we did have some dollars left in terms of CRL1, and it was $150 million, and that's actually been committed to by our board as well as our shareholder. There's three projects. I spoke to the 17th Avenue crossing. The second one that we think is really important is an underpass at 5th Street.
Right.
We need to continue on the grid system that we have started within downtown, carry it through. Remember, the story of East Village is the same as Victoria Park. We have an isolated community. We have to break down those barriers so you can penetrate. The second is we've seen the value, and you know, I think all developers have seen the value of creating a sense of place.
Mm-hmm.
When I leave a hockey game, when I leave a hockey game or a concert, I'm usually walking pretty fast down 4th Street. And what I end up doing is I walk on the road and then back on the sidewalk, on the road and back on the sidewalk. That has to be a good pedestrian realm.
It's pretty grim. Right?
It's quite dodgy as it goes. And so we really want to put our efforts in terms of developing that.
Great. So that brings us to, you know, so let's first touch on, before we get to the arena, let's talk about the BMO expansion.
Yeah, yep,
so,
yep.
So what will that do in your mind in terms of, you know, helping enliven that area? Like, what does an expanded convention center achieve?
Well, the big thing is it's I've never felt that we've really, as a community, answered the convention center question. Like, yeah. you know, the Telus Convention Center, though, I think it's a well-run building, you know, something, but it's really not big enough to meet the needs of what Calgary could be as a destination. And so the expansion itself, I think it really benefits Calgary as a whole, because our ability to, we can bring in our larger conferences, more events. Those are all really positive things. To have those take place within Victoria Park is additionally positive, because that retailer that's on, you know, Olympic Way or whatever we want to call it, Stampede Trail, they need traffic. And they need more traffic than just me leaving my office to go. They need traffic. And that's one of the things that I feel the BMO can really help along.
Yeah.
The other side is, I'd say that, you know, the Calgary Stampede is quite aware, and, you know, where is the growth within their business? And they understand that, you know, an area of growth is the convention business. It's something they do very, very well.
Yeah.
They aspire for, and I, you know, I really am a fan of it, is to be more than their 10-day festival. They want to be a year-round destination. And so that's where the BMO really comes into their world. And then selfishly, you know, you do the BMO expansion, you'll get a hotel along with it.
Yeah.
The hoteliers will, they're already talking to me, and they're already talking about, okay, when's this going to be announced, when it going forward, so that they can actually start building a hotel. And that in itself becomes a catalyst for the transition of the community. But the one thing I'd say is it's not just about the BMO. And I think about it, it's more than, you know, we need to have the BMO, we need to have the event center move forward as a community. We also need to have Arts Commons refreshed. And it's I know that's pretty greedy. It's kind of, you want it all. But if you're truly going to build a cultural and entertainment district, you need to have all those offerings. It can't just be about one thing. And And that's where I think sometimes as a community stop and they say, well, you know, we've done a great park. Well, that's great. You have one park. You know, are you activating that park? What are you doing to actually move it along?
Yeah. So the other big piece, and I know, you know, all the plans show, they all talk about, it's sort of the worst kept secret in the world, is that, you know, the centerpiece of the district in terms of trying to bring activity down. And, a lot, you know, a lot of people would say, you know, like, we've had an arena in the district, in that area for a long time. Yeah. It's not done anything in terms of ancillary uses or spinoffs or creating any sort of entertainment district. I think, you know, that's it seems fairly self-evident to me why that is.
Yeah.
The Saddle Dome's perfectly located. It's very isolated.
It is.
An isolating kind of building. It was clearly designed to be very inward looking.
Yes.
And if you look at a lot of the successful districts, they're designed and situated very
completely different,
programmed very differently. Yeah. But what do you think it can do? What's the opportunity to have an arena or an event center, or whatever wording you want to use?
Yeah,
that facility as a hockey arena, it's a concert venue, all these sorts of things.
Yeah.
What can it do to actually create the activity that we're looking for and the entertainment district that's talked about?
Yeah.
You know, why would people want to run a business or live near a venue like that?
So, you know, in my mind, and you defined it well, the Saddle Dome is actually, and this is one of the challenges I think we all have as Calgarians, is when you think hockey arena, you think Saddle Dome, and you don't realize what the potential is for that type of building. And when we've looked at other jurisdictions, and I'm telling you, it's not what Edmonton's done is what we're looking at. When you look at other jurisdictions.
Okay, so what's the template? Like,
so
if it's not Edmonton, so Edmonton has got the Ice District. It's very centrally located downtown.
So the,
why isn't that the template versus other districts, and what would those
be? So I would say that we've learned a lot from the Edmonton District. What I'm speaking to specifically is the Edmonton Arena.
Yeah.
And so the Edmonton Arena, the way that it's set up is focused about getting people in the building and keeping them there as long as you can.
Okay.
You know, the restaurant venues, the concert, all the secondary uses that you have are all within the building. Mm. If you walk around the edge of the building, the only interaction that it has with the street is a little area that can have press conferences. That's it. That to me is not.
You saw one of those press conferences.
Yes, exactly.
The other day.
Yeah, I know. Exactly.
It was pretty unpleasant for Oilers fans.
Yeah, I think they'll be doing press conferences over and over the next little bit. So sad, really. The
it's not. It's a lot of. I'm a Flames fan.
Yeah, no,
I enjoy the shed.
No, it's good. The when you look at the Edmonton Arena and you look at that and you look at what the potential is, imagine in Rogers Place they have a club called Club 99, and it's like a bar. And
who's that referencing?
Yeah, it's hard to believe. I heard they had a player, and Imagine if that was at grade.
Yeah.
And imagine instead of opening into the building, it opened to the outside of the building.
Right.
What a difference that would make
yeah.
in terms of the activity that takes place on that street.
Yeah. And that, when I remember, you know, the Calgary Next plan that
yeah.
they came forward with, and that's what really struck me most about that plan, you know, aside from some of the financial difficulty of
yeah.
developing West Village, is it seemed all about shepherding everyone in and out of the mm-hmm. building, like from the LRT. Like, there was really no district around it. It was all kind of shoved to the side, and it was this humongous monolith
right.
of a thing. So is the goal to have something different in Victoria
Park? Well, I think it's your starting point. And I know that oftentimes, you know, there's a reason why we use the language event center instead of arena. And
yeah.
one is...
Even though that rubs people the wrong way. It sounds does. Like it's like... Yeah. Some people are like, well, it's just... You're making it sound like something it's not yeah. to try and sell it on something. Yeah.
Well, and I'd say that there's an element of sell,
yeah.
which is quite correct, is, you know, you have to redefine the discussion with the community.
Yeah.
But the other element is an arena is a place where you play hockey that you happen to figure out how to do concerts in.
Yeah.
What an event center to me is a place where you have concerts, you can have galleries, you can have pop-up, you can have activities that you happen to be able to play hockey in. And that's the reverse of it. And yeah. so when I look at...
So is the point in talking about that way to think, like, have a different state of mind that would, you know, so when you are going to design it, it actually manifests differently?
You are. And you know, for myself, you talk about it that way so that, you know, the Flames and others know what the grand ambition is here. And it's not just to do a hockey arena. And they align to that. You know, the discussions that I've had with them superficially, they're on side. Reversing a little bit, you made a comment, and I think it was the right comment about the saddle dome. You know, it's in the wrong spot. You know, it's off to the side. It's quite insular. Go through. I'll check all those boxes.
Yeah.
I'll even add to it, structurally, it's set up to be a memorable building from the outside, but it's not set up to be very functional.
Right. The roof load. And stuff
yeah,
like that,
all
right?
those yeah. pieces that it goes through. So one of the differences that we've learned is, and, you know, the discussion on other projects was starting with the arena in the center and then saying, oh, we're doing an arena. Wouldn't it be cool if we did something around it? We started with the Rivers District Entertainment District and then said, wouldn't it be great if we had an event center in the middle of it? It's kind of it's a reverse thinking, but it makes a huge difference. So one of the areas that makes a difference is in terms of your public spaces,
mm-hmm.
celebratory spaces. A big part of the Rivers District Master Plan, specifically as it relates to the Arts and Entertainment District, is the need to be able to shut down 4th Street.
Yeah.
For celebrations,
right.
to have spill out spaces around big events. You know, next year we're going to be in a position that Calgary's going to celebrate having the Grey Cup. In my mind, if we're successful, that's where the celebration is going to take place.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with what's going on within the event center, but the infrastructure is in place for the rest of that.
Yeah.
And that's the fabric that makes these projects go. I oftentimes get asked and said, and you know, when we got back to, so it's important to look globally. Is there one that you look at that you want to emulate?
Yeah.
And I'd say there's not one that has. There's ones that have elements of what we'd like to emulate
yeah.
within
yeah.
it. But there's no one that's really knocked it out of the park.
Yeah.
You know,
like, I remember I was at the Calgary Next presentation
yeah.
a number of years ago, and Ken King sort of said, like, you know, we're not trying to do LA Live. And part yeah. of me was sort of like, well, why the heck not?
It's well, actually, why not?
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Like, well, it's not perfect, but no. there's a lot of pieces of it that would be fantastic to have.
And you borrow from LA Live, you borrow from Nashville in terms of what they've done. You borrow from O2 within London. You borrow from Columbus.
Yeah.
You borrow from all those various pieces. And the way that we borrowed those is we engaged an architect, Mark Johnson, with Civitas.
And yeah, we work with him, yeah.
Yeah, and yeah. so Mark had actually did a bunch of work
yeah.
For us on the island. We
yeah.
went through a competitive process.
Yeah.
But he had had success in terms of creating communities. And, you know, just like the, you imagine Chinook Center, it's great that it has Nordstrom, but if it doesn't have all those other great retail spots, it's nothing. And
yeah.
the Nordstrom guys aren't going to be happy. And what we figured out with Calgary Sports Entertainment and others is they're just as interested in the vision for the community as they are. And that's one of the reasons I think that they were so interested in West Village is the ability to actually control the vision themselves.
Yeah.
And what we've tried to demonstrate to them and others is that the city through CMLC can be a partner in actually achieving a pretty remarkable vision that achieves their goals in terms of having, you know, this great, amazing product. But do it in a way that benefits all Calgarians.
I want to talk a little bit about how this idea of city building and the event center arena in the middle of it, like thinking of it more like that way, does that, you know, perhaps color our thinking about how a financial structure comes together to
it does.
Because it's not, you're not just purely doing
an
arena, and the Flames aren't potentially just participating
in
just an arena. Like, is there creative ways you can look at it where, I don't know, like the Flames participate in some of the long-term development of the area?
Yes.
Like maybe you give them, you know, right of first refusal on
on
being a joint venture partner or something, like something other than just taxpayer cash that just goes to them. Is there other ways? I know you're involved in the Event Center Assessment Committee. How is that? How is your committee thinking about, you know, moving beyond, you know, the last iteration of the of the negotiation that didn't land anywhere?
No,
and it was quite contentious.
Yeah.
You know, we know there's going to be some public investment in there, you know, depending on how we define public benefit, but, you know, without giving away, you know, what's going on in negotiations, how is that committee thinking about approaching that conversation again?
And you'll see, and it's, I would say it's evolving as it moves along. And I, as a committee, we've really tried to focus them on the district and less about the arena component. And I use the arena word purposely because it's oftentimes what you get focused in on. On the deal side, when we look at what's been done globally, is having scenarios where you have maybe like Calgary Sports Entertainment, the city, other developers, all involved in multiple aspects of it, not just doing singular piece by piece by piece. The tough part that we have is the way that governments are structured is really by doing it piecemeal. We get into a scenario where we essentially say, well, we can put a dollar in this project or that project. We can put a invest in this road or that road, and not understanding in terms of the entire story that you need to tell. So, you know, one of the things that we haven't talked about at all is the bus barns. In Victoria Park, there's bus barns there. That doesn't suit our vision for the community. I think, you know, Michael Thompson, who I think you had on last time, he would support that as well. But we need to figure that out.
There's a cost to move.
There's a cost. But we're not going to figure it out right now. But we're going to have a commitment to figure it out. And so when you bring on partners, and if it's a true partnership, you're looking at solutions to all those things. The other thing that, you know, you talked about the build out of the area. The other part that I think would be quite, you know, if you have an event center, the event center, if successfully, you have some restaurant spaces, retail that spill out on the street. Get the activity, you have those public spaces that we're going to look at programming. Imagine a scenario that you're programming on, not in the case of Edmonton, the ICE district programs itself, but we as a city program it, and we have some sort of revenue share as it relates to with Calgary Sports and Entertainment. So that we're not, and it's not about making money, it's just so we all win at the end of the day. And we as a city, we have the benefit of collecting, and mind you, with the CRL, and we're taking the tax. You know, we can make money off the land deal. We can also make money off the tax deal. And so it's looking at it in a more consolidated way. And I think that my dream for Calgary is that we start looking at projects this way. And I know that's how developers look at their projects. You know, you look at it and you say, I'm going to lose a little bit here, but because of that, I'm going to gain something here. We need to look at it in a more comprehensive fashion.
So in our year-end review of 2018, our panelists sort of tried to make some predictions for 2019.
Interesting. What
everyone seems pretty optimistic that a deal will get done. Are you, you know, you're in the thick of it. Are you optimistic this will get done?
What I say is...
Will
is,
it get announced at the Stanley Cup Parade?
At the Stanley Cup Parade. I know Edmonton
That was Darren Krause's prediction.
Yeah, I know Edmonton won't be there. Well, the Flames are good. So I agree with that. And they're entertaining to watch, which is good. The in my mind, when I look at it, there's complete agreement within of Citizen Calgary that we need a new event center arena to replace the Salom. There's no question marks. There's if I'm talking in a group and somebody says, well, what'll happen with it? And I say, well, you know, we're probably going to have to knock it down. No one is tying themselves to the front of that building and saying, man, we must keep that. So that to me is quite positive. In our vision that, you know, has been endorsed by council, we've identified that this is where it's going to be. We've been quite, you know, out there in terms of identifying that, but there's been no blowback in regards to that. It's been very supportive and saying most of us are glad you identified where that's going to take place. This makes sense. Where there is contention is around the business deal.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, those other pieces probably are a little easier, but I'm glad we've overcome those pieces as a community. Now it's the business deal side. My hope is that we get figured out in the next 2 to 3 months, because I think we're going to, you know, you can only go back so many times collectively before, you know, we, to be honest, we hate each other so much that you just can't move it forward.
Yeah.
I'm not suggesting that's where we're at. We're actually, I think, doing very well together. But if we don't figure it out in the next, you know, 2 to 3 months or year, we're still going to be focused on it.
Yeah.
You know, we're not, you're not going to hear an announcement from CMLC 2 years from now saying, well, remember the lands that we had identified for an arena event center, we're turning that into X. It's not going to happen. That's where it's going to be. And so it's just figuring out that business deal.
Well, let's leave it there, and we'll hope for some success. And, you know, hopefully it's a deal that, you know, it's probably not something everyone's going to love, but that's probably something that means there, you know, That's a reasonable deal.
Like, it is.
No one's perfectly happy, but no one's too upset. No. But
anyways, let's have the discussion as a community. I think that's the important thing.
Until next time.
Thanks very much, Josh.
Thanks, appreciate Michael. It. Common Ground YYC is a production of Livewire Calgary. If you value quality local journalism, please consider supporting Livewire by following it on social media, by clicking and reading stories, advertising, or contributing directly via Patreon. Visit livewirecalgary.com.